on Audio, the podcast for writers and all who are interested in books, literature, and the printed word. Write on Audio is the weekly companion podcast of Write On magazine and the Write On suite of publications from Pen to Print. Subscribe by searching Pen to Print in your favourite podcast app to have new editions delivered to you each week. Write On Audio interviews, inspiring you to write by sharing the experience of prominent authors. Our interview this month is with novelist Frances Harding. Frances Harding came to widespread publication attention when her 2015 novel, The Lie Tree, won the Costa Book Award. She has published 9 novels and numerous short stories. As well as the Costa Award, she has won the Carnegie Medal twice and the Robert Holdstock Award for Best Fantasy Novel for Cuckoo Song. We caught up with Frances for this month's interview. The interviewer is Claire Buss.
I was really interested to read on your website that you originally didn't submit your books or your work in the first place. It was a friend that encouraged you or submitted for you?
That was the case with Fly By Night. I had been producing a lot of short stories before that and submitting quite a few of them, particularly during my teens and early 20s. And in fact, I think I first started sending off short stories to magazines and competitions when I was about 16. But Fly By Night was my first attempt at writing a children's book. I'd been engaging in some writers' group meetings with, well, I've been a member of a number of different writers' groups, but this was a small group with a friend of mine called Rhiannon Lassiter, who's colossally talented and who had actually been a published author since she was in her late teens.
Okay.
Anyway, we'd been working on some ideas and sort of showing each other our work. And she was the one that noticed that the story concept I had was probably actually a children's book. I hadn't actually realised until she told me this. And at the point where she put that idea in my head, the whole book came to life. So I started writing it with more enthusiasm, experimenting, very much pleasing myself, putting in things that I found interesting and that I found funny or exciting or whatever. And when I got to about 5 chapters of this, Rhiannon said to me, you know, this is enough for you to send to a publisher. This is good enough that you can do this. And I said, no, it isn't. No, this is just an experiment. This is basically rubbish, but I'm having some fun and I'll see where it goes and then bury it in an unmarked grave. So Rhiannon, fortunately, did not take this cowardly nonsense from me and stole my chapters and took them to her editor. And at the end of the week, to my colossal surprise, I had a book contract.
Do you think you still have that same reservation now, sending in to your editor, your new books? Do you still have that same reservation?
What, the fear? Oh, yes. Good heavens, yes. I make no secret of the fact that writing the last third of my books, each book, I am generally convinced it's dreadful. And I usually wildly hate it. And it was clearly a terrible idea to begin with, but it's far too late and now I have to push on. And I remember at one point in the middle of, I think, my 5th book, I can't remember which one it was now, coming down and basically ranting to my other half about the book and everything that was wrong with it, and ending my rant with, and I don't even know how far through it I am. And Martin said, 2/3. You're 2/3 of the way
through. So you said that you weren't really sure you were writing children's books specifically until your friend Rhiannon pointed it out. So, and that once you knew, it got a lot more fun. Do you think having that mindset of, oh, I'm writing for children, gives you more leeway?
I certainly find it very freeing. I think it's actually a better fit for the way I think anyway, to be honest. A lot of adult readers want to know what they're getting. They'll have an idea of the genre of fiction they like and don't like, and it's sort of tied into their self-image and so forth. Whereas I think younger readers are a lot more open-minded. And so I have a lot more freedom to basically scrooge some genres of different sorts together. I mean, The Lie Tree, that's that's sort of a historical novel and sort of a Victorian melodrama and definitely fantasy.
Yeah.
And sort of about feminism and blasting powder and paleontology and a tree that eats lives.
Yeah.
And a murder mystery. I mean, what is that?
It's everything. It's a children's book because you can get away with putting, like you say, mixing all those genres together. I wanted to ask whether you have a certain person or a character in mind that you write to.
Yeah, my usual answer to this is I'm writing for a younger version of me.
Oh.
Some of my books are written for 12-year-old me, and some are sort of written more for 14-year-old me. And as you can probably guess from the books, younger me was quite a strange little girl. And so I'm writing about the sort of things that she was interested in, and which to a large extent I still am. She was interested in history. She liked fantasy. She liked dark fantasy. She liked creepy elements. She liked mystery. She liked adventure stories. And she liked things that made her think. She liked strange new worlds. She liked new things. So I'm very much trying to write a book that my younger self would have liked to have read and had never read. I have this morbid aversion to the idea of retreading old territory and writing books that have already been written either by myself or other people.
I was thinking about wonder, and I wanted to ask, do you think grown-ups and children have a different sense of wonder? And as soon as I wrote that question, I was like, well, of course they do. So I wanted to know whether you think, can we make that bridge? Can we bridge that sense of wonder? And obviously, you've kind of already answered that because you yourself look at things in a wondrous way. What do you think stops grown-ups accepting that wonder?
I think there was a certain pressure on grown-ups to have all the answers. I think by a certain age, they are supposed to have opinions. They're supposed to know or believe they need to know, or have already learnt how the world works fundamentally. And their worldview can start to ossify. You know, it happens when you stop asking questions.
Mm.
Some people stop asking questions because to do so makes them look ignorant. Whereas I'm quite happy to admit that there are loads of things I don't know, and the world is colourful and fascinating. There's a lot more I'd like to learn about it.
What sort of tips would you have for people who are looking to get into writing specifically children's fantasy?
The thing is, I'm aware that I'm a slightly odd writer, and every writer is different. So what works for one person may not write for others. I would say don't patronise, because younger readers are not stupid. If they're being patronised, they're going to spot that a mile off. And then, quite understandably, you'll lose them. Try and rein in self-indulgence, which I know is something I always need to do. pace matters, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. But other than that, write a book you'll enjoy writing with subjects you care about in the way that you would for anybody. try to write the best book you can, one that has emotional resonance that you can feel. Don't go in with a lecture and then sort of cover it with a sugary external coating of story.
Yeah.
In terms of fantasy books that colossally influenced me when I was a child, and I think have had a lasting effect on my imagination and my own writing, I love the Darkest Rising series by Susan Cooper.
Oh, yes.
My sister and I were lucky enough to have those read to us by my father, quite often next to a blazing fire, which really adds to the atmosphere. It was great. It's just, you know, piecemeal, chapter or two at a time. And we absolutely adored those. And I think that's had a lasting effect on the way I see the world, on my love of folklore, my sense of the way atmosphere can be conveyed, and the way that every place is subtly magical, because every place holds stories that are still a living presence and into which one can stumble by accident.
I have one final question. I want to ask about the hat. I have to ask, is the hat inspired in any way by the late Sir Terry Pratchett?
It's a perfectly reasonable question. It is actually a coincidence. Okay. I certainly think that the late Sir Terry carried off this style of hat with more panache than I do. I've been wearing fedoras and trilbies pretty much on a daily basis. I'm a habitual hat wearer for, oh good heavens, since I think my mid-20s, certainly for years before I got my first book contract. It's just a style I like. Before that, I used to wear lots of peaked caps, but then my other half gave me, I think it was a trilby the first time. And I've always liked trilbies and fedoras because when I was young, I used to love watching black and white spy thrillers and detective stories and gangster stories and you know, the Thin Man films and things like that. So I still emotionally associate hats like this with adventure and mystery and really cool coats with the collars turned up.
Yeah.
and that's that sort of thing. And it's got that association for me. It's not my author hat. It's my everyday hat.
Everyday hat.
Yes, absolutely. Generally speaking, whenever I leave the house, I put on a hat like this. I just didn't stop when I became an author.
Do you write in the hat or?
I don't, no.
You don't write in the hat.
And I don't generally wear it around the house, except for Zoom calls when
Zoom
I do.
Zoom calls, absolutely.
Because even though I'm not leaving the house, my image is, and I'm interacting with the world. So emotionally, that still feels like a hat situation. I also have more hats than any sensible person should have, including some very silly ones.
Thank you to Frances Harding for featuring in this month's interview. We'll print links so you can find out more about her writing and order her books in the show notes for this podcast. We're always delighted to read your contributions. So if you'd like to see your words in Write On or hear them on this podcast, please get in touch. We'll share this link and all others mentioned in today's podcast as part of our show notes. I've been Tiffany Clare, and you've been listening to Write On Audio. Write On Audio is produced by Chris Gregory, and it's an alternative stories production for Pen to Print. This podcast is supported using public funding by Arts Council England.